Welcome to ACC Nation Podcast, episode 76. The crew, Will Ogen in Minneapolis, Chris Bond in Tampa, Xavion in Washington. I'm Jim Quist in Richmond. We appreciate you listening. On this episode, a review of last week's highs and lows in football. But first, some hot items to look at in the ACC Nation Power Poll. Clemson is a solid one. Florida State and Virginia Tech are now tied at two. Will the Seminoles deliver a 1-2 punch to the Wolfpack, or are they in for a surprise? Let's check with the guys. Xavion, what are your thoughts? Florida State going to be a little rusty going into this weekend with the Wolfpack?
Oh, I absolutely think so. But yeah, they've had, I think, the last 2 weeks off, and with them having a freshman, true freshman quarterback at the helm, there's definitely going to be some bumps and bruises along the way, but they've had, at the same time, 2 weeks to prepare, so they could potentially take advantage of this and unveil offense that NC State hasn't been able to prepare for because there's no game film on the quarterback and how he operates the offense. Uh-huh. So it's going to be a really good game, and it's going to be a real good test for Florida State going forward through the rest of the season.
All right, Will, what are your thoughts?
It's really the most interesting matchup of the week because last time we saw Florida State, you know, they played pretty much an A-plus defensive game against Alabama, and we don't know what to expect of this team really with, you know, not combining that plus, as Xavion mentioned, new quarterback coming in. We really have no idea what to expect of this Florida State team, but if we want to try to take anything off of game one, you know that defense is going to be there, but I would imagine they're going to be relying heavily on that running game just to get the freshman quarterback comfortable.
This whole thing was brought up by Chris Bond, who is a big Seminoles supporter. And I'm wondering, Chris, are you sort of buffering us here to sort of take maybe some, you know, in case the Wolfpack lays it on the Seminoles? Are you trying to lay out a smoother surface for us to deal with? Or are you really seriously concerned here that there could be a problem?
Well, everybody knows my feelings about NC State, particularly their head coach and how he operates. So coming into this, one would think that you got to balance that with what I'm thinking here is that NC State has been underwhelming in its performances overall, especially over against South Carolina. But NC State has a habit of just showing up against Florida State. They have many times over the years. And the advantage this time, though, I think Florida State's going to pull us out as they've had certainly plenty of time to prepare. And they have a quarterback that there's no book on. The advantage I see for NC State is, you're going against a true freshman quarterback with 4 fifth-year seniors on your defensive line. NC State does have issues, and we can certainly go over them. Defensive line isn't one of them. I would say a top five defensive line in the country, if you ask me, when they're performing. And I expect they will be this Saturday, but I think top to bottom, the better roster is going to win this game out, probably by 1 to 2 touchdowns.
Okay, there you have it, 1 to 2 touchdowns. And Dave Dorn is making book on you, baby. Next up, ACC Men's Soccer has 7 of the 11 top spots in United Soccer's top 25. Notre Dame is tops. ACC Women have 7 of the top 25. Those polls are available at accnation.net, plus a look at the Players of the Week. NFHCA Field Hockey top 25, Duke is at number 2. They lead 7 ACC teams in the top 25. Florida State is the only ranked volleyball team from the conference in the AVCA poll. North Carolina dropped out from number 24 last week. Notre Dame and Miami are in the RV category. That's receiving votes. The Irish are 2 steps away from cracking into the top 25. Congratulations, by the way, to Chris. He had a perfect 10-0 record in the pick last week. I don't know how he did that. It's amazing. Everyone else, 9-1. Not bad. Not bad. Overall, Chris and Xavion, and then Will, and then some other guy in that order. This week.
yeah, some other guy.
And that being said, this week that guy is going to pull a rabbit or something out of his hat or something else. I have picked UVA, Pitt, and UNC to win, and I'm the contrarian. We'll talk about that in a second. Power poll, Clemson, definite, 1. Florida State, Virginia Tech, 2. Miami, 4. Notre Dame rounds out the top 5. Check out all of these and more at accnation.net. So now, guys, let's talk football. Chris, since you are the laughing guy here, I'll go ahead and let you just, wherever you want to start here on one of those things that I've thrown out so far. Then we'll get into some real football.
Well, I would give away my secret to the undefeated record, but I won't. However, I'll let you in on one thing. It requires at least a 10% alcohol by volume.
I figured as much. It's moving the tiddlywinks on the paper. I know. That's how that works. I'll give you big points here because you picked Syracuse, and the rest of us went with Central Michigan. So that was the killer for the rest of us. That had to have been a drinking game. I don't know what else could have created that scenario. But
I'm calling openers here, I'd like to. Well, what I want to do here is since we're going to talk about opener, you're going to let me open here. I really wouldn't mind start talking about Virginia Tech out there. It looked like it was going to be another slugfest that East Carolina was going to put in on an ACC opponent. Mm-hmm. And certainly they have won as many ACC games as some other programs the last few years. After halftime, Virginia Tech came back out and pretty much told them no. Jackson is playing mistake-free football with 8 TD passes and no picks. If you had asked Justin Fuente starting out the season that he would have that, but through week 3, he would be delighted and thrilled. They also showed a familiar defensive edge that we're all familiar with. And they locked down the Pirates after that early burst. And 5-1 on the road under the second year coach is quite impressive. I think that should be noted. And that's something I really wanted to get out in this podcast. That is just incredible, and certainly congratulations, Coach Fuente. You're off to a great start already, and another good quarterback.
Good points. Before we get into anything else here, real quick, let me throw this in because I missed it for some reason or another. The ACC is leading all conferences with 6 teams listed among the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook's preseason top 25 rankings, including 3 among the top 10. Those teams, Duke, Louisville, North Carolina, Miami, Notre Dame, and at number 25, Virginia Tech. How about that? We'll have more on that. That's something that just came out, and so we'll have something on the website a little more in detail about that later. We'll talk about it probably next week if we get to it then. Lots of football. So, guys, let's go ahead and jump in here with the action from last week, because some interesting games. Well, let's start with this Oklahoma State and Pitt game, and we're going to start out with Will on this one. Oklahoma State and Pitt. Was this anything that would surprise us really?
No, I mean the game was essentially over before we sat down with our favorite drink and snack. Oklahoma State basically did whatever they wanted, just like last year in the passing game against Pitt. And this Mason Rudolph, who's going to be a name who's kind of just on the outside of the Heisman Trophy race. But, if he keeps putting up 497 passing yards and 5 touchdowns every game, he's going to be there. And, it really is showing just what kind of poor pass defense Pitt has had, but now they get Jordan Whitehead back this upcoming week, so they'll hopefully be a little bit better. But I think the thing we also need to look at here is that we might have a quarterback controversy on our hands in Pittsburgh.
No controversy whatsoever. I don't think. I mean, really? Do you think so? I mean, do you think that Brown is going to hold his job?
I mean, I don't know what the most recent update, but I know when the depth chart came out, there was the or there for this week. I would imagine that he will start, but his leash is going to be pretty short. And if he struggles again, then you might see Ben DiNucci.
I thought Ben DiNucci did fairly well, and you know what? He's the golden boy there. He's who's everyone is looking forward to having on the field on a regular basis. And Brown was really the go-between, you know, the transition guy. And the transition's not working out too well. Something that I'm all too familiar with on the pro level. Xavion, let's talk, since Max Brown is your guy, only because of his history, okay?
Yeah,
so let's talk a little bit about, you know, is there a controversy there among the quarterbacks, and will he keep his job?
I think this could have been, or this is the end of Max Brown's era at Pittsburgh. He was 7 of 10 for 60 yards when they pulled him in the second quarter, and when Ben DiNucci came in, he was able to lead the team to touchdowns, and the proof's in the pudding, essentially. If you are the starting quarterback and you're supposed to be the leader of the team, essentially, I believe he was picked as captain as well. I'm not 100% sure on that, but and you can't lead your offensive unit to put points on the board, and somebody comes in and replaces you and does just that. It's kind of the writing's on the wall, essentially. So I think Max Brown might have saw his last true playing time in college football.
So basically, the Max Brown era, that could be spelled ERA or it could be ERROR. Let's go on to Chris. Your thoughts on this game?
Stealing the words right out of my mouth there, Jim. I tell you what, this Oklahoma State had 21 points before Pitt fans could find the game on the dial. I mean, when they found it, they wish they hadn't. 497 yards in Mason Rudolph. This was a bad combination of strength versus weakness here in the grossest of terms. Oklahoma State has got one of the most prolific passing attacks this year, and they'll be a contender all the way up until, I think, the end, until they're tilt with their cross-state rival Oklahoma at the end. They're going to win a lot of games, and Rudolph is a real talent. He'll be on that radar. And certainly I wouldn't doubt him getting an invitation to New York was a Heisman Trophy ceremony with performances like this. But on the other, his counterpart on the other side, I think DiNucci's your man going forward. I'm with the X-Man. Brown is, it's when you see a or next to your name as a quarterback and then the other guy and you are the starter, the writing is beyond the on the wall there. That's death certificate pretty much for your college career in his case. And there's no real shame in it. A lot of careers don't work out in college, but there's a reason that USC let him walk. We're seeing it. He seems to be a good young man. He works hard, but it's not even a matter of fitting the offense. His teammates around him seem a bit uninspired. When DiNucci was in there, there was definite movement and confidence in the offense. Certainly, they were way too far behind at that point to catch up, and their defense certainly wasn't going to give them the break to come back in it anyway. There's no quarterback court controversy in Pittsburgh. DiNucci's your man going forward.
I put Pat Narduzzi on the warm seat for the performance so far of Pitt. I think
remember we were talking about if your specialty with Adazio. And Narduzzi was defense coordinator and a good one over in Michigan State. The defense has not picked up. They've had a lot of big wins and certainly had a great season last year. And I think he's got a lot of street cred right now, so I wouldn't get more than lukewarm on this here, but yeah, it's certainly alarming.
So certainly not as warm as somebody else's.
Yeah, I'm not ready to go there just yet with Narduzzi. I mean, he's still in year two, and we can start worrying about that, you know, maybe at the end of year three.
All right, fair enough. Let's move on to our next game here. UConn and Virginia, and Xavion, talk to us about how the Cavaliers performed.
They did really well. The UVA quarterback, Benkert, broke his own school record of passing yards in the game with 455. And the offense, which was been anemic in big plays the last couple of weeks, showed their big play ability throughout the game against UConn. But I really want to look at the defense because, you know, they led the way in stopping UConn through and throughout and forcing a lot of three and outs and stuff like that. So it was a big win and a good good win to continue through the season for UVA.
All right, Chris, did this help you any with the power poll, this performance by the Cavaliers?
Oh, absolutely. Certainly did. I don't think it got them out of the double digits yet, but they're not bottom anymore. And that's really has less to do with how Boston College looked. And we'll get to that game here in a bit. But more so that this was a impressive performance in the sense that they played disciplined football. Connecticut is not a good football program. Let's keep that in mind. That program has not taken off like the supporters of that school thought it would. With its own problems. But that aside, this was a performance. It was nice to see the kids for Virginia who have been working hard, having some fun and having a big win, getting a sizable win on the scoreboard. And it was nice to watch that. Benkert looked very nice. This is one of his better games. You know, when you pass for a school record of 455 yards, it's nice to see that because I just think this was a nice game to watch. I'm very happy for Virginia for this win, actually.
Well, you're happy for Will. Will, your thoughts on the performance of your Cavaliers?
I'm pretty much ready to say that this was the best performance by this team under the Bronco Mendenhall era. I mean, they broke a ton of records, you know, in this game. Xavion mentioned the one with Kurt Benkert and a school record 455 yards. Their first touchdown of the game was a 9-minute 46-second drive, which is a program record. Three wide receivers broke 100 yards for the first time in school history, those being Donnie Dowling, Andre Lavroni, and Olamide Zaccheaus. They all had really, really long touchdowns. The big one was Lavroni, who had a 73-yarder, which I don't think there was a UConn defender within 10 yards of him. Also, as Xavion mentioned as well, the defense was really strong in this. They forced multiple turnovers that when UConn was in deep. They defensively, Micah Kaiser, once again, having an outstanding game, 15 tackles, 2 sacks, named linebacker of the week. In which, you know, it's pretty big deal because he's arguably a top linebacker in the nation. And this team definitely needed a performance like this coming off of last week's performance against Indiana. And then with the short week coming up Friday night when they travel out to Boise to play the Broncos.
All right, let's move on to our next game. And that is the NC State and Furman action. Chris, talk a little bit about how that all wrapped up for the Wolfpack.
Well, the Wolfpack did what they were supposed to do, and they handled an overmatched opponent from the FCS there. So they need to clean up a lot of their mental mistakes that I saw. You know, Bradley Chubb had a very silly roughing the passer penalty that kept the Furman drive alive early in the game. You know, and busted Comfort and Shumpert for a 71-yard touchdown. Yeah, there's. These are mistakes you're not going to be able to make next week.
All right.
You rough the passer next week against FSU. You can't spot them 15 yards at a time.
That's a game killer for you. When you play at that level, that will kill you. All right.
Furman, not so much, but FSU, absolutely.
Yes. Let's go on to Will now and talk a little bit about your thoughts on the Wolfpack in Furman.
On the positive side, Ryan Finley, a very efficient game, 22-27, 231 yards. The running back, Naeem Hines, averaged 8 yards carry. The team as a whole averaged 6 yards per carry and ran for 5 touchdowns, Jalen Samuels having 3 of them. But on the negative side, the pass defense was a bit suspect. They allowed 11 completions for 196 yards. That's pretty impressive for Furman to do that. I mean, they only, like I say, they ran the ball 47 times, through 19 passes, but they're obviously a big run team, but when they were throwing, they were getting some pretty lengthy plays out of it. And that's something that the NC State defense has to be concerned about.
All right, Xavion, you have any thoughts about how NC State performed and where they're headed from here?
They did great on offense. They had a very balanced attack. They had a total of 242 yards rushing and 240 yards passing. And if you're able to get just as many yards on offense, throwing the ball and running the ball, it's always a good week. And they also, looking at third down conversions, they were 7 out of 11. So they're able to maintain and extend drives, so that's always good. But going forward, like Chris said, those mental mistakes that should happen, especially against an FCS division opponent, those type of mistakes you can't have, because if you're making those type of little errors and mental mistakes in these, you know, butt-whooping games, you're going to be getting and really fighting the dust to play a true quality opponent like Florida State or Clemson or whoever. Like, they will make you really wish you didn't make those bonehead plays.
Well, word of the day, butt-whooping. I love that. Let's move on.
Well, it's all fans of Chicago know what that is.
Oh, okay. Let's move on to Will and talk a little bit about this Duke team, which is rising. It's not the Phoenix rising, but they're definitely moving up, especially in the power poll.
Yeah, we talk so much about Daniel Jones and his passing ability. He actually struggled this game, 20 of 35, 184 yards, was sacked 5 times. But the big thing is they really use the running game to great effect. I mean, Sean Wilson at 176 yards, the freshman Britton Brown 86. They, you know, ran for 3 touchdowns total. And, you know, the Duke defense once again did very well. They've got 3 interceptions off of Baylor's quarterback. He only completed 12 out of 34 passes. I say even though Baylor scored 20 points, the Duke defense did not make it easy on them.
Xavion, Duke and Baylor, is there something there that we really need to keep an eye out on the Blue Devils this week as they go against their crosstown rivals, the Tar Heels?
Absolutely. The offensive line play raised a little bit of concern because they allowed 5 sacks and they also allowed 12 tackles for loss. So Baylor was in their backfield a whole lot in the game and causing havoc. And that's not something you really are going to be looking forward to, especially in the ACC when you got the likes of Clemson's defensive line, NC State's defensive line coming up. If you aren't able to protect Daniel Jones, the points they've been putting up, the great offensive plays we've been seeing are unlikely to continue and whatnot. But I really want to take a moment to shout out to Sean Wilson and Britton Brown because they really put on a show. Wilson had runs of 50 and 65-yard scores, and Britton Brown contributed with a 34-yard touchdown. So big playability out of both their running backs.
Chris, reflect on this Duke-Baylor game.
Well, I gave Duke credit in my power poll. I rose him up near the top 5, actually. I really do believe they're definitely one of the fastest rising teams in the conference. But on this specific game, the offense didn't look nearly as smooth as it did in the first 2 weeks. And I'm with Xavion. Jones was under duress all day, and the line kept making some mistakes at key times. I remember there was a chop block penalty that negated Jones getting a 2-yard touchdown run. And that was one play before Jones threw the interception in the end zone. Wilson and Brown bailed out the passing game. Basically, they certainly had plenty of big plays on the ground and kept them unbeaten heading into the matchup against UNC next week.
Okay, let's move on to the Wake Forest and Utah State game. And Xavion, we'll start out with you.
So this game was never really close. Wake Forest outgained Utah State 397 yards to 77 yards in the first half and held a 29-0 lead, like I said, in the first half. And the defense made the job a whole lot easier for Wake Forest. They only allowed 1.98 yards per play and applied pressure throughout with 5 quarterback hurries and getting 2 sacks. The Demon Deacons have been doing really well rushing the ball as well. They had the 3rd straight 200-yard game. So if they're able to continue to run the ball like this and protect and control the ball and the clock, that's definitely a good recipe for winning games and whatnot, especially in ACC.
I'm wondering, Chris, if this might be the team that we should be looking at rather than Duke, or is that off the mark?
Now, I don't think you're that far off the mark there, Jim. You certainly had a solid argument when you consider this. Wake Forest, and this is, of course, calculating they played Presbyterian the first week. They've already scored more points than all of Dave Clawson's first season. So if that doesn't tell you where they're headed, and that they have something brewing there in Winston-Salem, I don't know what will. Because that when I looked up that stat, that's just impressive. Now, maybe a little better than some are giving them credit for this season. They did open the season with three straight 200-yard rushing games. That's, as Xavier was pointing out, that's the big factor in how they look. And when you're moving the ball at 200 yards a clip each game, you're going to win a lot of football games. They've outscored their opponents. The number I have here is 141-27 so far. Now, of course, that's Presbyterian and Boston College in there as well. But I think that Wake Forest is certainly, along with Duke, flipping the script on in the conference this year.
All right, Will, tell us what your gut's telling you about Wake Forest and where they're headed.
I continue to be impressed with the defense. Xavion first mentioned just how great they were against the Aggies of Utah State. They were up 29-0. We're pitching in a shutout into the third quarter. They allowed Utah State to rush for just 42 yards on 31 carries, which is 1.4 yards per carry. And for the year, they're fourth in the ACC in total defense, and they're ranked 21st nationally. So even though they lost their defensive coordinator, they're doing just fine. Offensively, though, Wolford had a decent game. He was 12 of 22. You know, he threw for 242 yards, but that completion percentage is a bit sketchy to me. But I say they got a great contribution from Arkeem Bird, who ran for 120 yards. And once again, I've mentioned him every week. Greg Dortch, another strong game, 4 catches, 68 yards, and a touchdown. He's one of those unheralded freshmen who have really made an impact.
Well, here's a team that we haven't been overly impressed with in the ACC Nation Power Poll, and that's North Carolina. They just have not been able to get things together. They took on Old Dominion, a team that is having a half-and-half type of season so far. They're down, I think, from last season. Chris, tell us a little bit about how North Carolina did against the Monarchs.
Well, Chad Surratt certainly gave North Carolina just exactly what they needed. It was a solid, mistake-free performance. That allowed North Carolina, the Tar Heels, to take control early of the game there. Yeah, with the two touchdowns he ran, the one that he threw, helped that domination. 30-point win there. Now, the defense looked bad, especially defensively in the first two games. But you got to keep in mind that second one was against Lamar Jackson, who makes a lot of defenses look bad, unless they're from Western South Carolina, of course. But that's another game we'll get to in a moment. But the UNC defense was much better against the weaker competition and could be a sign of improvements to come there. But certainly a game that Surratt needed, and certainly has got to help in the locker room have some confidence and some playmaking from that side of the ball.
Okay, Will, do you agree that it was a confidence builder for the Tar Heels?
I do, and it started with the fact that they let Chaz Surratt do most of the work in this game. As I could tell early on in the season, he was going to be the go-to guy. He is the future for North Carolina. But the stat that impressed me the most, they ran the ball 50 times in this game.
What?
We complain about all the times they don't run the ball. They ran the ball 50 times in this game, averaged 5 yards a carry as a team. Their leading rushers, Michael Carter and Jordan Brown, you know, they each had really, you know, ran for two touchdowns. Brown averaged over 7 yards a carry, Carter over 5. See what happens when you actually run the ball successfully. Or when you actually run the ball, period.
Yeah.
Maybe Fedora found some light bulbs at the local Walmart.
Period.
But, you know, they play Duke next week, so when it's going to be a key thing, he's going to pass a bunch. So most likely will happen.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. Xavion, your thoughts on this game?
Oh, it was definitely a confidence booster for North Carolina. They were, I would say, down and out, honestly, after the first two games with the performances against Cal and then Louisville. And just not performing well on either side of the ball. So it was good for them to kind of get back on track in this easy game for them. But they really were having difficulties on third down, and they were only 3 of 11 against ODU. They scored 53 points and whatnot and big plays and were able to execute when needed. But if you can't extend drives and whatnot, that's not going to be good going forward against you know, again, quality opponents. And they also weren't able to, you know, hold on to the ball. They had two fumbles and only lost one, but ball security is also going to be an issue going forward for North Carolina. So they have a real test next week against Duke, and if they play anything like they did in the first two games, they're going to end up 1-3 on the season.
Okay. Okay, Will, we started off with a real barn burner with here's another one. Notre Dame, Boston College.
You know, I thought Notre Dame would win this game, but I didn't think they would be so dominant in the way they did it. The key thing here is Notre Dame ran the crap out of the football in that game. And they have 515 yards rushing, averaging over 10 yards per carry, 7 rushing touchdowns. And, you know, Boston College has been such a strong defense for many, many years, not even just with, you know, Adazio, but going back to when Jack Kaczynski was the coach and then back before that. And, you know, this is probably, I would say, the worst defensive effort I've seen from Boston College in many, many years, just strictly from the rush defense turn. Because, you know, Brandon Wimbush, I think we figured out he's not a passing quarterback. They have to, if they get down early in the game, they're going to be in trouble. Notre Dame is, but for whatever the reason, Boston College didn't stack the front and didn't make Notre Dame try to beat them with the pass. Instead, they just kept running right down their throats and continually succeeded.
So, Will, who is standing at the gates, allowing people into heaven? St. Peter. Guess what college he went to? Boston College. College. So, if you went to Notre Dame, you're in bad shape. Xavion. Let's move on here. That was a horrible joke. Xavion, let's talk about this Notre Dame.
I'm sure the Jesuits will forgive you.
I was trying to figure out where Touchdown Jesus came into all this.
Apparently for Boston College, it didn't. So you can rub anything you want, all you want. But that didn't happen. Xavion,
say something positive about Notre Dame.
Let's move on. Yeah, say something positive about Boston College.
Just say something.
Something,
right?
Anything.
Nah, yeah. It was great. Notre Dame ran for 500 yards, and that's great anytime you're able to put that many yards on the ground. But your quarterback, again, ACC play, is quarterbacks leading the way with carries, and he had 21 carries. Like, he's a huge running back that can take that kind of pounding, so going forward, that's not going to be the way to win football games. And he was only 11 of 24 for 96 yards and an interception. So any person that knows any sense of football, coming into game plans, I'm loading up the box. I'm throwing exotic blitzes on third and long and forcing him to beat us through the air, because we know that they can run the football. But if you put 8-9 in the box, I want to see what his receivers can do on one-on-one coverage and whatnot. So being the SC fan that I am, I'm looking forward to this Notre Dame game and butt whooping we're going to put on them. So.
Okay. All righty. Chris.
Getting that in every week, isn't he?
Carry the ball for us here.
Well, the stat line that I looked at there, you look at one quarterback who goes 11 of 24 for 96 yards, and the other quarterback goes for 24 of 40 for 215 yards. Who do you think won the game? stats don't tell you everything, though. I got to tell you, Dazio is in big trouble here. You have to, and by the way, Will, the coach for Jadinski was Tom O'Brien. And you have to go back even further before him to find a Boston College defense. They gave up this much yardage. This is spinning out of control up there in the ACC Northern Outpost. And, he better have been hiding something, because it's only going to get tougher down the road when you've got Florida State and Clemson coming on down the road here.
Yeah, everybody accuses people in Boston drinking too much because they're Irish. It's because they're fans of Boston College. That'll do it every time.
Especially in Southie.
Xavion, let's talk about the Syracuse performance, which was an upset for us, or at least most of us, who made the wrong pick against Central Michigan.
Oh, Syracuse picked up a really solid win over Central Michigan. They were able to pull away in the third quarter for the most part, up to that point, was a back and forth game. They were able to contain the Michigan transfer Shane Morris, forcing two interceptions, and they brought one back for a touchdown. But ball security is starting to become a problem for Syracuse because both the running backs lost the fumbles that they had in the game, and that's five on the season. And you can't protect the football you against quality opponents. You're not gonna end up doing too well. And this is another game, another case of an ACC quarterback leading the way in terms of running the football and stuff like that. Dungy had a long run of 74 yards, but if you take that away, he only all the other runs, he was 10 carries for 31 yards. So for the most part, he wasn't getting it down on the ground. And again, you don't want your quarterback, who's just the catalyst for your offense, to be taking a pounding like that.
True. All right. Let's go on to Chris and your thoughts on the only person who picked Syracuse. What was it about Syracuse, other than that 10%, that helped you see something that the rest of us didn't?
Actually, you know, it's because I believe the Syracuse offense couldn't play that poorly 2 weeks in a row. And I believed in Eric Dungy would put together a good game, which he did. Not, I didn't think it would be almost 400 yards of total offense. But maybe we should stop doubting whether he's capable of that or not. There were still a few fumbles in this game, though, for Syracuse that fortunately did not cost them. Ball security is as Savion pointed out, is a problem for them. And if they're going to salvage and have any keep that whisper of a chance at a bowl game and six wins in this, that's got to be eliminated right now. I'm still thinking, looking more about 5-7 season, but they won't even get that if they don't take care of the football.
Okay, Will, Central Michigan was not an easy win, at least on paper. Everything pointed toward the Chippewas having control of that game from the get-go. So, your thoughts now on as we look back over our shoulder at that game.
Yeah, they came into this game 2-0, and they had just come off a pretty impressive beatdown at Kansas. I mean, yeah, I know it's Kansas, but still, you beat them by 18, you know, at their place. It's still an impressive win, but you know, they came out there and they had nothing for that Syracuse run game. It wasn't just Dungy's passing, which we know him for a lot, but. You know, like Bond kind of mentioned it, you know, he had over, you know, almost 400 total yards. He had 105 yards rushing himself, and the team as a total had 300 on the nose, you know, averaging just under 7 yards a carry, and two runs of over 70 yards in this game. It just shows you what kind of excellent rushing attack Syracuse had in this game.
Let's go on to this Virginia Tech game that Chris alluded to earlier. East Carolina is by no means an easy team to beat, and have laid it on a couple of ACC teams, including the Hokies, in the past. So there's always that nervous Nelly feel when you go into the stadium down in Carolina, because you're not sure what the Pirates are going to pull out of their bag of tricks. So let's talk a little bit about this game further, Chris.
Well, they certainly pulled out. They didn't pull out enough booty on this for this game. That you know, when you give up 57 straight points, that, what a huge rout! I mean, just it looked like it was going to be a fight to the finish there. You know, the back seven of Virginia Tech, and actually their defensive line, the young ones on up front there, really started controlling that off that line of scrimmage, and just stifled. And created turnovers, and the rout was on, and just all you can say is this was an avalanche, or in this case, if we're talking about Pirates, a tidal wave that they were not able to survive. This may be an even better Virginia Tech team than we were looking at last year, in spite of the losses on the skill positions. They're starting to look a little bit scary, guys.
I think they've got a better quarterback, and it seems to be developing in that direction. Power poll has them tied second with the Seminoles. That speaks volumes. So, Will, what are you seeing here with Virginia Tech?
Well, full disclosure, this most recent weekend, I was in the middle of a four-hour drive from where I live in the Twin Cities, up into the town of Bemidji, which is about 100 miles south of the border up in northwest Minnesota. And these guys were sending me updates, you know, as the game was going on and as their games were going on. And when I found out ECU was up 17-7 at Virginia Tech, I'm like, I'm starting to panic because, you know, ECU has been one of the, they were playing like the worst Power 5 team, you know, of the, in this season. And I was quite baffled by the way things were going. But then, you know, they just, Virginia Tech just went ahead and reeled off the next, what, 50 something points in a row. 57 in a row. Mm-hmm. And, By the time I arrived at my destination, I got messages from Jim saying that the water boy had just scored for Virginia Tech. But yeah, this game was all about, you know, Josh Jackson's coming out party, 372 yards, 5 touchdowns. And we'll say, full disclosure, he didn't have the best game the week before, but he definitely shut out in this game. And, you know, they had an excellent rushing attack against 287 yards. And, I tell you what, you know, East Carolina is really probably got to be regretting firing Ruffin McNeil a couple of years ago, because that program is just gone completely in the toilet.
He had a lot of great connections, and as a recruiter, boy, you couldn't go wrong there. Xavion, let's get your thoughts on this Virginia Tech and East Carolina game.
Oh, it was a Josh Jackson and Cam Phillips show. They combined for, you know, 3 scores between the two of them throughout the day. And the defense spent a lot of the afternoon in the backfield at ECU with 11 tackles for losses. And they created multiple turnovers, 2 fumbles and an interception. But the running game, Virginia Tech ran the ball 62 times. So they made it an effort to, you know, ground and pound it out. And the quarterback, which hasn't been a case for some of the recent teams we talked about, the quarterback did not lead the team in carries. So they're trying to protect and keep Josh Jackson as healthy as possible, because they really do have a special talent. And, yeah, they played phenomenal to come back from 17-7 after the first quarter and just put on a show like they did. So Virginia Tech is definitely raising some eyebrows and each week looking more realer than the last.
Well, Virginia Tech definitely moving in the right direction. Let's move on to our next game on the schedule. And that's the Clemson-Louisville game. And, Will, we're going to start with you. And try not to exude too much pain here as you describe this game.
So I'm sure the Louisville felt plenty of it as the game went on. But it was just an impressive performance by Clemson. I thought they would win, but not this comfortably. I mean, Kelly Bryant, you know, had an amazing game, throwing for 316 yards and a touchdown. They got excellent running performances from Tavion Feaster and Travis Etienne, who both ran for over 90 yards. Etienne actually had an 81-yard touchdown run. But Louisville, you know, is all Lamar Jackson all the time. Once again, threw for 317 yards, 3 touchdowns in a losing effort. And once again, ran for 64 yards on 17 carries. But there were only 10 other carries besides him. So it's, you know, I don't know if they would have done much better without him running as much. But, you know, it feels like he's just a one-man offense right now.
Xavion, your thoughts on this game, on this matchup between Clemson and Louisville?
Oh, it could have been much worse. The early score that they had in the first quarter, I believe it was, to make it 7-7, was after Clemson had a player disqualified for targeting, and there was disarray on the Clemson defensive backfield, and Lamar Jackson took advantage of that. And if you watch the play, he really kind of just heaved it up for prayers, and a Louisville receiver made a play on it and was able to score, but after that, it was a Clemson show, and Kelly Bryant definitely, you know, all his talents were on full display. But again, I want to bring up the quarterbacks for both teams were the leading rushers, and this is not going to be good going deeper into the season. These are not Tim Tebow's we have in the backfield running the ball and doing what he did. They are not man-childs. They are going to be getting pounded throughout the season, and it's not going to be a good result for these teams. But Clemson definitely has completely convinced me that they are the team to beat in the ACC this year.
All right. And Chris, about wrapping this up, Louisville and Clemson.
613 total yards and 433 total yards. The better roster won this game. The best player was on the other sideline. DeMar Jackson can only cover up so much. This is not the same Louisville team, especially defensively. And as Xavier, the X-Man, just said right here, this could have been a lot worse because it took a little while for Clemson to get in the gear. But once they get out of first and the second, this thing took off. And Jim alluded to, you alluded a couple weeks ago, that Bryant might be better than Deshaun Watson. I'm not so sure about that, but it's really hard to tell the differences except by the numbers in their jersey on the performances of these offenses from last year to this year. Clemson, they look awfully scary. And, you know, it's a bit premature, but you have a lot of folks across the country talking about Alabama, Clemson, round three coming up. And Clemson looks like they're ready to hold up their end of the deal. With maybe their hardest game is going to be at home left against Florida State, who certainly won't be this, won't come in with the full arsenal that they were hoping to come with. It's going to be tough to see Clemson get knocked out, even by somebody except maybe Virginia Tech right now.
All right, and let's talk here about the AP Top 25 since we finished with Clemson. Honestly, I don't think this makes a whole heck of a lot of difference, but, you know, there's for Clemson fans and Alabama fans, both a lot of proud people there, and they like to, you know, trash talk each other a lot. You know, this whole thing about who's number one, I honestly could care less. It comes down to the championship, and that's what really, really matters as to who's going to be number one. But a lot of question as to why Alabama is number one and Clemson is number two. Will, you have any thoughts on that? And does it really make any difference who is one and two in the AP Top 25?
Not at this point. I mean, one and two, I'll be more worried about that once they start doing the college football playoff rankings. But yeah, I think we just go by the thing of Bama started off number one, and they haven't really done much to really warrant losing it.
Okay. Xavion, any thoughts on that?
Personally, I don't care who's number one and two until the last week of the season. It's the third week, and there's still a lot of football to be played. And honestly, from what I've seen, this is probably the most wide open it's been amongst the top teams and who really has the best chance. Alabama's not Alabama of recent memory. They definitely have a lot of issues on offense. Clemson is doing great for right now, but can they sustain that? And so on and so forth with the other teams in the top five and whatnot. It's wide open right now. So at this point in time, nobody should put too much into these one and two rankings.
All right. And Chris, your thoughts on this topic?
Well, a lot of perception because Clemson had to bring back so much. They had to come back from a little bit lower in the poll. And let's be honest, guys, for the most part, we thought they were going to drop out of the top 10 at some point. Now, I'm going to side with Xavier on this. It's way too early in the season to be talking about it. Some fan bases have already had heart attacks. I won't say which, USC. Anyway.
Oh, I got something to say about that one. It's my turn.
Oh, we bet you do. We had money on that. But no, it wasn't money. It was just beer. But anyway, I'm with you, Xavion. This is not a something we should really be taking seriously. Let's get to the first week in November, and before we have some real arguments about this.
All right, guys, we're going to do some final thoughts here, and we'll start out with Will.
I want to just bring up a kind of an underrated matchup coming up for this week, and that's Wake Forest going about an hour and a half west to Appalachian State. And Appalachian State is, you know, one of those teams that, you know, people have said could be the best group of five school in the country. And they've gotten off to a little bit of a slow start. They're 2-1. They got blown out by Georgia, but have had a couple of closer wins. But, you know, they still are a very good team. And, you know, they're going to host they have a big game on their campus with an undefeated Wake Forest coming in. And, you know, That could be definitely a game to watch. It's at 3:30 Saturday on the Watch ESPN app, and also watch out for Boston College Clemson because Clemson's favored by 34 points in that game. Just kidding.
Okay. All right, Xavier.
Are you sure it's my turn?
Well, of course. Go right ahead.
Got to talk about this USC and Texas game.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. That was an amazing game. By far the best game I saw all season so far. I do want to bring attention to Texas, though. They are going to be legit. Tom Herman has that program right where they need to be. Yes, they're 1-2. That record doesn't indicate that. And the Maryland game, that was a blowout. But what they did and put on display against USC – and controlling that line of scrimmage and forcing those turnovers and this great plays on offense when they needed them, that Texas is going to be a force to reckon with going forward. But it wasn't enough for Sam Darnold, so another W for USC going forward. We got Cal this week and trying to go 1-0 this week again, so fight on.
All right, go Trojans. All right, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah, Xavier, that may be the best defense USC plays all year, and I don't think that's a knock on anybody else out there that could be on their schedule, including the playoff. Texas looks like Florida State West with a monster defense and a freshman quarterback. That said, we're glad you're still with us among the living. We were sincerely worried about you, son. So
there's a couple moments when my heart stopped beating.
I bet. Around the age of 12 or 13, I got past the argument of measuring quarterbacks by championships. I went past that a long ago, and that certainly, I think, was a mark of somebody who hadn't thought out their argument very much by picking quarterbacks by the number of rings they have. Football is a team game. It's a team game. And if you need a reminder, you need to watch rewatch Clemson-Louisville game. Lamar Jackson was the best player on the field. Without a doubt. Also, without a doubt, Clemson was the best team on the field. I have never seen one man win a title, a conference championship, a football game, or even a quarter. Somebody's got to make the blocks. Someone's got to make that tough catch over the middle. And someone's got to run that 100, 200 yards and again get those tough 2-3 yard runs as well. Jackson cannot do it by himself. And I'm sorry for Louisville fans to think that he might was – going to get there, take him on his shoulders, but I still think he is the best player in the country. I do believe that. You just can't win this by yourself. All the magic in the world under center isn't going to save you when you play what was probably the best defensive line, I think, in college football. And they brought a few friends. Christian Wilkins brought friends last Saturday, and Jackson got to meet every last one of them, unfortunately. If you have hanging on that argument by thinking whoever your favorite quarterback is the best ever by how many rings he has, find another way to win the argument, because titles and games are not won by quarterbacks or even single individuals. They're won by great teams.
So we would always love to hear from you. So if you'd like to drop us a line, you can go to our website, accnation.net, and just click on contact. We're not collecting any information there, by the way. You just send us some comments. And if you want to reply, make sure you put your email address in there. If you'd
and
like
credit
to,
card number.
And
account. Right. Social Security.
Uh-huh. Firstborn
male
child.
They'll be safe with us.
Okay. Yeah. And just as a quick reminder, you can give these guys a really hard time on Twitter. Will, where can they catch up with you?
I am at Will's World MN.
And Xavion.
At Xavion, Xavion.
Okay, and Chris?
At ACC Midnight Inc.
And I've forgotten mine. It's ACC The Q. So if you'd like to give us a yell on Twitter, feel free to do that. We'd love to hear from you as always. So until next week, thank you for listening. For Will Ogden and Chris Bond and Xavion, I'm Jim Quist.
Slodger.
USC undefeated. Fight on.